Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Back from a wild and interesting weekend in L.A. I had dinner with old friends Joe and Barbara Ruskin, and Barbara has discovered that her voter registration has apparently been flipped from Democratic to Republican. Apparently she signed a petition. In fact, there has been an arrest for voter fraud. Yeah, a Republican in California. And in fact, his entire organization seems to be engaging in some pretty bad shenanigans. And we're getting reports from West Virginia now that people are walking into the electronic voting machines, this from the West Virginia newspapers, and pushing the button that says Barack Obama, and the machine flips, the light lights up for John McCain and says, thank you for voting for John McCain. Just like in the Homer Simpson cartoon, except it's actually happening. Bob Barr is with us. He is running for president of the United States on the Libertarian ticket. Congressman, former Congressman Bob Barr from Georgia. His website, Bob Barr, B-A-R-R, 2008.com. And Bob Barr, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good to be with you all.
Great to have you here. And always nice talking with you, sir. Is Bill Seidman, William Seidman, the former head of the Resolution Trust Corporation and the former chairman of the FDIC, appointed by George Bush Sr. to put together the RTC, appointed by Reagan before that, a good Republican who has come out and endorsed John McCain, told a story in Grand Rapids last week about how he went to he invented the tranching of these mortgages, this whole thing of aggregating a whole bunch of mortgages and then creating one single security and then slicing it into 1,000 pieces and selling those. It was how they handled the mortgages that they got stuck with the RTC, $300 billion worth. And he went to Alan Greenspan and he said, shouldn't this, because these don't fall under the overview of the SEC, they're not stocks, they're not regulated, and in fact, there's not even a government agency that tracks how many of them there are. Shouldn't we regulate these in some way? And Greenspan said, no, this is, and you can see this on the entire speech on YouTube, just plug in William Seidman. He said, shouldn't we, be at least having some oversight over this? And Greenspan said, no, this will be an opportunity. These are sophisticated instruments being bought and sold by sophisticated people. This will be an opportunity to prove that the market is self-regulating. And instead, it has produced a disaster for the entire world. Isn't this the ultimate repudiation of libertarian economic policies, Bob Barr?
I'm not sure whether that's the case, but it clearly is wrong what Greenspan is saying here. First of all, I'm not absolutely convinced that these instruments, particularly in the way they were used by these financial institutions and by institutions that are controlled or regulated to some extent by the SEC, are not reachable by SEC regulations, where you have these, these mortgage-based security bundles that were used to either artificially inflate the assets on the balance sheets of these corporations or financial institutions, or were being used to disguise the size of the debt of these institutions. It seems to me that that could very well be a fraud.
It could be a fraud, yeah, which libertarians would be opposed to, but it would be a fraud in as much as it was a violation of regulation, which, I mean, back 25 years ago or thereabouts when I was hanging out with the Libertarian Party, the libertarians at that time, Mr. Brown, as I recall, were strongly opposed to there being any regulation of the stock market, of basically any oversight at all of any kind of market.
Well, they may be. I'm not. I think that if a citizen takes a dollar or a thousand or $1 million of theirs to a financial institution, an investment house, a mutual fund, or whatever, and says, I want you to invest this. I want you to use this to try and make this money grow. I'm willing to assume the risk. They shouldn't have to assume the risk that there is going to be a fraud perpetrated on the use of their money. They have a right to be assured that the company, the investment house, the mutual fund, the financial institution, whatever it is going to take that money and utilize appropriate you know, mechanisms and accounting measures and no fraud and transparency, so that their investment, is protected. They might assume the risk, but they don't assume, that there's going to be fraud perpetrated on them.
This morning's newspaper, Freddie Mac secretly paid a Republican consulting firm $2 million to kill legislation that the mortgage finance giant and its sister company, Fannie Mae, 3 years before the government took control to prevent their collapse. At what point, I think this is particularly since you're coming out here, Bob Barr, in favor of government regulation of at least part of the marketplace, where are the boundaries? Where are the limits? Because the Republican stand, and at least the modern day Republican stand, and the Libertarian stand certainly, is perceived to be anti-regulatory, and the Democratic and the liberal stand is typically perceived to be pro-regulatory. Where do we draw the lines?
Well, we draw the line those minimal regulations that are necessary to assure the honest, transparent, fraud-free, activities of these financial institutions. And I think it's also important to have transparency with regard to not only the operations of these institutions, but also of the political contributions. I'm not averse, certainly, to political contributions. We don't get enough of them. That's my only concern. But I think it's important, particularly where you have individuals working in campaigns, for the public to know where their money is coming from.
We're talking with Bob Barr. BobBarr2008.com is his website. He's the candidate for president of the United States from the Libertarian Party. Bob, there's a number of areas where you and I strongly agree. Privacy and surveillance, in particular, the First and Fourth Amendments of the Constitution have been hacked by this administration. I'd like to talk about those, and I'd like to talk about some of the areas where we disagree. In regard to, in particular, the First and Fourth Amendment, what do you see that your former party we can probably lay blame all over the place on this thing, but certainly this administration have done to that? And what's the remedy at this point? How do we put the Coke back in the bottle, or whatever the metaphor? You being from Georgia, I thought that might be a good one, but whatever the metaphor is.
It's not going to happen by virtue of electing Senator McCain or Senator Obama to office. Both of them supported the most recent and truly breathtaking expansion of government surveillance powers, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act amendments earlier this summer. Dramatically expanded the power of the government to listen into electronic communications, whether email or telephone communications of American citizens, without any court intervention and without any individualized suspicion that the individual is communicating with terrorists or engaging in criminal activity. So clearly the Republican and Democratic parties are both on record firmly supporting this. The only way it's going to change is through a third party. A party, the Libertarian Party, for example, that understands what the Fourth Amendment is and the proper role for gathering of foreign intelligence, and the fact that there is a very important distinction between gathering foreign intelligence from foreign sources or overseas and the American government gathering evidence on its citizens without court intervention here at home.
Mm-hmm. That's hard to dispute. I was so disappointed when Obama supported that, but on the other hand, it seems to me that a third party is not going to win the presidency. I mean, respectfully, it's extremely unlikely, shall we say. And so what should, in your opinion, what will you be doing after the election to try to bring back civil liberties in the United States?
Well, I didn't say that that winning the election was the only way to do it. Voting for the Libertarian Party, that is Bob Barr, as its nominee, will, and if we can get a significant percentage of the popular vote, as, for example, Ross Perot did in gathering 18-19% back in 1992, that fact alone will lead to the issues that we support, just as it led to the issues that Ross Perot supported in the reform movement in 1992, having a place and being considered by the other two major parties. In other words, if you get a sufficient popular vote, the issues that you champion, the issues that form a part of your platform, cannot be ignored by the two major status quo parties. So that, if we can
gather
enough votes.
Why not join the Green Party and working for IRV?
I'm sorry, what?
Why not join the Green Party and working for IRV, instant runoff voting, where you can have multiple parties and or fusion voting like they have in New York
State? Well, I'm talking about something that has an actual impact over the short term. That is over the course of the next couple of election cycles. The American people are not, over the next few years, going to change the way they vote. Yeah, that's a great theoretical.
Well, they have. I mean, we have over 300 communities now. San Francisco's the largest that have instant runoff voting.
I'm talking about at the national level, trying to influence national policy. And I have nothing against that, nothing at all. All I'm saying is our goal is much more practical oriented, and that is to gain a sufficient percentage of the popular vote right now so that these issues that we are talking about, whether it is in the area of civil liberties reaffirmation or whether it's trying to actually get a handle on government spending, so that they are part of the national debate.
Yeah, it does need to be part of the national debate. I agree with you on that. We're talking with Bob Barr, the Libertarian candidate for president. We'll come back from this break. You can stick around, Congressman.
I will be here.
Great. Okay. Well, let's, on the other side of this break, let's discuss Medicare and Social Security, an area where I suspect we'll have a little less agreement. 17 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Oddest bumper music of the morning. Welcome back. 22 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Georgia Congressman Bob Barr, or U.S. Congressman from Georgia, who is running right now for President of the United States in the Libertarian Party. BobBarr2008.com is website. Bob, why, if the majority of Americans want to have the government be the insurance company, so that it's not skimming money off the top to pay it off to stockholders, and it is actually answerable to we the people, why not have old age insurance as and disability insurance as Social Security is, and why not have single payer health care insurance as Medicare is and Medicaid? Why do you oppose these programs?
Because there's no basis in the Constitution for them, and they simply reflect an increasing trend to have government do whatever people want it to do, which was certainly not the way our system of government was set up. It was set up to be a government of limited, not unlimited, powers. And simply because a particular issue or a particular activity might suit the whims of a majority of the electorate at any particular time certainly does not mean, and was not intended by our framers to mean, that government should step in and do it.
Well, if that's the case, why in Section 8, powers granted to Congress of Article 1 of the Constitution, does it say the Congress shall have power to, you know, goes through taxes, duties, imposts, pay for debts, and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States? repeating a phrase, the general welfare, that is one of the seven items listed in the preamble as the purpose for the Constitution itself. If providing for people in their old age, if all of us providing for all of us in our old age, or for people who are disabled or widows or orphans, and for that matter, life, I mean, this is the ultimate pro-life position, is if you get sick, we're going to heal you. If that's not welfare, what is?
Well, it is welfare. I mean,
well, it's right there in the Constitution.
I'm not arguing with what it is, but simply, saying, taking that one phrase in the Constitution and saying that trumps the rest of the Bill of Rights, for example, which states very clearly that the unenumerated powers are reserved to the people and to their states, respectively. The individual's responsibility to educate their children, to put food on their table, to provide for health care, for example. Those aren't powers that are within the purview of the federal government. The general welfare was not intended to be an overarching power.
Then why was the First Continental Congress appropriating money to provide for poor people? And I'd point out the Ninth Amendment, says the enumeration of the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. That doesn't mean you can't. That's not limiting the power of government, or the Tenth Amendment for that matter. The power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, not prohibited by the states, or reserved to the states respectively or the people. If the power to provide for the general welfare is explicitly laid out in both the preamble and in section 1 of article 8 of article 1, which is literally, it says right at the top, the header is powers granted to Congress, how can you say those powers aren't granted to Congress?
Well, it isn't. I mean, there's nothing in the Constitution that says Congress has the power to set national health care policy and to force citizen A to pay for the health care of citizen B. Where is that?
I would say it's in the preamble, and it's in the first paragraph of Section 8. It says that Congress has the power to levy taxes to provide for the general welfare.
Then you would support a whole line of Supreme Court cases, I guess, going back to the 1930s that basically stand for the proposition, I think quite anathema to our framers' intent, that if a right is not guaranteed, there is not a specific limitation on the government's power in the Bill of Rights, that means the government can do it.
Well, we're talking about power to tax.
You and I would have a very, very divergent view of the proper role of the federal government.
Yeah, clearly we do, but I would submit to you that this is simply falls within the purview of the government's power to tax and use that money to provide for the general welfare.
Apparently you would draw no line whatsoever. You would believe that it would be the power of the federal government.
The line I draw is
tell people whether they can smoke, whether they can eat fatty foods, whether they can drive certain cars because they use too much gas. That's against the general welfare.
The line I would draw is what people will vote for. So, and I said the line I would draw is what people would vote for. But we're out of BobBarr2008.com. Check out the website, please.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call
4 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Your radio support group for We the People. Here on Air America Radio, 866-303-2270. Our telephone number, TomHartman.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, AirAmerica.com, for our free video stream. And if I can find my mouse here we go. Connie in Anaheim, California. Hey, Connie, welcome to the show.
Hi. Listen, I was listening to Bob Barr. And it's my view, as a presidential candidate, he should stand on his record. If Barr is opposed to new government intervention, how does he justify prying into President Clinton's personal activities to the tune of $50 million? So he believed in intrusion in government before he was against it.
I think he, yeah, yeah, I, actually, I'm not going to try and defend Bob Barr on that. I disagreed with the impeachment of Bill Clinton. I thought it was a horrible thing. And Bob Barr was one of the floor leaders of that. You're right. But he's not here to defend himself. So I don't frankly know what he would say, and I'm not going to guess it. But Connie, thanks for raising the issue. Tim in Detroit. Hey, Tim, what's on your mind today?
Hey, welcome back, Tom.
Thank you.
Years ago, I had read a collection of essays by Ayn Rand that was put together by one of her followers. I can't remember his name. And then one of the essays, she argued that the reason the railroads weren't doing so well in the 19th century or were so corrupt was because they were tied in with government. Mm-hmm. And she went on to argue that a so-called laissez-faire system would get rid of a lot of that corruption because of competition and so on.
Right.
But what I always found lacking in that was I think she missed John Maynard Keynes' analysis, where even if you have a laissez-faire market, eventually the business cycles, as they run over time, they're going to get stuck and you're going to have permanent depressions. And
yes.
So you have to have intrusion by government to help correct the business cycle.
Yeah, if this serious correction and this credit disaster, which I would argue is brought to us courtesy of Alan Greenspan and Ayn Rand and laissez-faire, if this does not turn into a depression, it will be because there are still intact and in place enough of the institutions that Franklin Roosevelt put into place, like the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC, and the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, that there are enough of these, and for that matter, unemployment insurance and Social Security, there's enough of a social safety net, there's enough infrastructure, there's enough regulatory infrastructure, and there's enough, catch you when you fall infrastructure in place, that we won't have those long bread lines and that 30-35% unemployment. Hopefully. And it'll be because the government did exactly the opposite of what, the libertarians and the Republicans want. And it's an excellent point, Tim. Thank you. And thanks for making it. 866-303-2270. Our number, Chris in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Chris. Chris, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's up?
Chris,
I'm sorry, your cell phone is breaking up so badly I can't hear it. I'll put you on hold and our call screener can check with you and see if it's working there and we'll get back with you. Dan in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Tom. How you doing? Hey, that thing about the voting and the irregularities and stuff.
Yeah.
I can see why the Democrats haven't done anything over the last so many years because they haven't had any control. But my solution would be if they can find somebody working at a poll place, a head of the polling for the state or even the Secretary of State, if they could charge one of those people and get somebody put in jail somewhere, then the other people who are just working at the poll places are going to have a little second thought.
Yeah.
And on recount, they said that, Harris in Florida, she sent out a letter that said if anybody on this takeoff list, somebody comes in and their name is even close to theirs, take them off. Now, to me, that sounds like she's promoting illegal activity. And I think anybody who got took off through that should be able to charge her.
Well, unfortunately, the Supreme Court ruled in the case of Indiana that this is legal. And in fact, this now it's spreading to Wisconsin. You've got Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen, a McCain-Palin campaign co-chair, came back from the Republican National Convention in early September and filed a lawsuit that sought to force Wisconsin election officials to painstakingly cross-check every new voter registration. Of course, most of the new ones are Democratic because they're new people registering to vote for Obama. And so here you have the Republican Attorney General in Wisconsin now trying to knock people off the rolls. I mean, this is happening all across the country.
But at least he's saying to go over them really with a fine-tooth comb.
Yeah, they want to disenfranchise. I mean, for example, I'm registered to vote as Thomas C. Hartman. My driver's license says Thomas Carl Hartman, as does my Social Security card. So I, if I lived in Wisconsin, I would not be allowed to vote. My mother hasn't had a driver's license in 30 years. She would not be allowed to vote. And, I mean, the more people that they can disenfranchise, the better it is in their minds. And I think that it's a crime. It's an absolute crime.
Well, it is, but they need to get them to stop. And I think if somebody who gets thrown off because his name was close to somebody else's, but his name was legally registered and stuff, seems to me he would have a case to file a charge.
It would depend on the state, and it would depend on how it happened. But I think broadly speaking, what we need to do.
Florida sounds like they did it illegal completely.
Yeah, and well, certainly they did in 2000. I mean,
I'm saying.
Yeah,
they never charged her with. She puts out a letter that says if the name's even close to one of these felons, kick them off.
Yeah, no, she should have been charged for that. The problem is that the agency that would charge Catherine Harris with that crime would be the Department of Justice.
Well,
and now
they can't do it, yeah.
Right, and that's been Bush and Gonzalez. But your point is well made, Dan. And let me just, you know, add to this here. This story from the West Virginia Gazette. This was the first story. Paul Nyden reported. This is a local newspaper. In the local West Virginia paper, at least three early voters in Jackson County had a hard time voting for candidates they want to win. Virginia Matheny and Calvin Thomas had touchscreen machines in the county clerk's office. Now, keep in mind, this is just the local paper. In Ripley, kept switching their votes from Democratic to Republican candidates. Said Matheny, who lives in Kenna, quote, "When I touched the screen for Barack Obama, the checkmark moved from his box to the box indicating a vote for John McCain." When she reported the problem, she said the poll worker in charge, quote, responded that everything was all right. It was just that the screen was sensitive and I was touching the screen too hard. She instructed me only to use my fingernail. Even when she began using her fingernail, Matheny said the problem persisted. When she tried to vote for candidates running for two open seats in the Supreme Court, the electronic machine canceled her second vote twice. On her third try, she managed to cast votes for both Menace Ketchum and Margaret Workman, Democratic candidates for the two open seats. It took her three tries. Calvin Thomas, who retired from Kaiser Aluminum in Ravenswood in 1983 and now lives in Ripley, experienced the same problem. Said Mr. Thomas, "When I pushed Obama, it jumped to McCain. When I went down to governor's office and punched Governor Joe Manchin, it went to the other dude. When I went to Karen Facemeyer, the incumbent Republican state senator, I pushed the Democrat, but it jumped again. The rest of them were okay, but the machine sent my votes for those top three offices from the Democrat to the Republican. When I hollered about that, the girl who worked there said, 'Push it again.' I pushed Obama again, and it finally stayed there. Then the machine did the same thing for the other candidates. Why didn't she tell me about that before I started using the machine?" So that's the initial story. And then here's there's a follow-up to this. It's even more vote flipping going on in West Virginia. Three Putnam County, this is a whole other county. Three Putnam County voters say electronic voting machines changed their votes from Democrats to Republicans when they cast early ballots last week. This is the second, again by Paul Nyden in the West Virginia Gazette. This is the second West Virginia county where voters have reported this problem. Last week, three voters in Jackson County told the Gazette, et cetera. That's the story that I just shared with you. And they're saying the same thing. And this woman says, Shelba Ketchum, a nurse from retired nurse from Thomas Memorial Hospital, described what happened in Putnam County Courthouse in Winfield. "I pushed buttons and they all came up Republican," she said. "I hit Obama and a switch to McCain. I'm really concerned about that. If McCain wins, there's something wrong with the machines. I asked them for a printout of my vote," she said, "but they said it was in the machine and I could not get it. I did not feel right when I left the courthouse. My son felt the same way. I heard from other people that they also had trouble, but no one there knew how to fix it," said Ketchum. Very, very, I mean, this is nasty stuff that's going on. Nasty stuff that's going on. And not to mention the robocalls and the people being purged from voting rolls and Democrats who signed petitions thinking that they were signing, you know, some good and positive petition, finding that what they actually did is they re-registered themselves as Republicans, so that now all of a sudden, you know, the Democratic Party no longer has them on their list, so they're not going to be able to call them and say, "Hey, do you need a ride to the polls?" So they're not getting the Democratic mailers. They're not getting the Democratic information. I mean, this is nuts. Matt in Napa, California. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Tom. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you. Hey,
I want to discuss the seeming schizophrenia of libertarian economics. You know, they seem to want to imply that the market's the ultimate arbiter of creating economic freedom for individuals.
Right.
Yet at the same time, they balk at the idea of too much democracy within the marketplace. At least, you know, when Barr was saying, you know, you can't have the whim of the people, you know, being dictated into the marketplace. And I just wonder, how can those be two separate things? You know, the sum total of individual freedoms is a democracy, in my way of thinking, at least. And, you know, the fact that there are some criteria that we can set for what kind of democracy that we see in the marketplace, we can poll individuals in America. I think most people in America don't want to see the billionaires that we have, and yet they don't seem to have any interest in that kind of research or those kind of discussions.
Yeah. Libertarianism, I refer to libertarians as Republicans who want to smoke dope and get laid. Because the Republican Party has so embraced basically the libertarian ethos since Ronald Reagan, and the result of it is what we're seeing right now. It's the crash. It's the disaster. I mean, they did the same thing in the 1920s. Oh, you know, hands off. Let it all fail. And it's just, it doesn't work. It's an economic policy that doesn't work. Matt, thank you very much for the call. John in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, John.
Hey, good morning, Tom. Great hearing you.
Thank you.
I got two questions for you. My first question is, voting, why is voting such a chaos? I mean, why do we have to be registered? Why do we have to indicate what parties we are? Why can't we just go in with a valid ID and vote, or vote at home on a computer? I just don't understand.
Well, first of all, voting from home on a computer, I'd have some problems with that myself, because I'm just concerned that it could be hacked. But there are 9 states where there's same-day registration, where you can go in and register to vote on the same day that you vote. And registration is just, it's like, it's a way of confirming that you're a citizen and that you can vote. And that's a not unreasonable thing. And particularly registering for a party, so that you can vote in primaries, that's a reasonable thing as well. 45 minutes past the hour.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
And calling out my name, yeah. I can't hear you anymore. I'm walking down the bank, going down this road. I once loved a woman, a child I'm told. I gave her my heart, but she wanted my soul. But don't think twice, it's all right.
Nine and a half minutes before the hour, and this is a true story. Yes, my friends, our pigeon alert for the day, a true story. This from Agence France-Presse. Security forces in Natanz, Iran, have arrested 2 suspected spy pigeons near Iran's controversial uranium enrichment facility. One of the pigeons was caught near a rosewater production plant in the city of Kashan of Isfahan province. The report cited an unnamed informed sources saying, added that some metal rings and invisible strings were attached to the bird. Early this month, a black pigeon was caught wearing a blue-coated metal ring with invisible strings, the source was quoted as saying, of the second pigeon. Source gave no further details of the pigeons, neither their current status nor what their fate will be. Natanz is home to Iran's heavily bunkered underground uranium enrichment plant, which is not far from Kashan. I've been telling you all along, nobody ever sees a dead pigeon. Nobody ever sees a baby pigeon. They are robotic spies. Speaking of robotic spies, I was cut by President Bush this weekend on Saturday, I think. Yeah, Saturday. I was on Fox News debating Mike Gallagher, and we got cut because Bush came on. It reminded me. This is now the second time that I've been cut by a famous figure. I guess the first time was, it must have been 15 years ago or so. I was on CNN Morning News. Or I was scheduled to be on CNN Morning News on their morning show with, what was it, Sonia, as I recall? In any case, the producer, we went in the day before and we did the whole rehearsal thing. And then, because this was on, it was for a feature segment on ADHD. And that next morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, they called me up. This is when I lived in Atlanta. Called me up and said, we're going to have to cut the segment this morning because the Lorena Bobbitt trial is going live when you're supposed to go on the air. And then the woman pauses and chuckles, and she says, I guess you could say you're the second guy who's been cut by Lorena Bobbitt. So now, geez, the ignominy of it all, cut by Bush as well. Anyhow, Frank in Los Angeles. Hey, Frank, what's up?
Well, Bob Barr really gets me. He says that he doesn't want to pay for other people's insurance and doesn't realize that universal health care brings down an insurance rate for everybody, and his rates would come down, my rates would come down, because you're drawing out of a pool. I mean, these Republicans only only think of themselves. They don't think of the universal benefits that every man is going to get from this program.
Well, I think that's the great divide, is it a we society or a me society? And, Frank, you've identified it. Dave, a Republican in Baltimore, might give us a different perspective. Hey, Dave, you're on the air.
Yeah.
Harlan in Los Angeles. Hey, Harlan, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Good to listen to you. Listen, I've been listening to a lot of this talk lately about voter fraud, and, I practice law in Los Angeles, and I don't see any way. Why don't we go to a system where we vote over an entire week. I mean, we all know that.
Well, that's what a lot of states are doing with early voting, Harlan.
Huh?
That's what a lot of states are doing with early voting. I mean, as many as a third of voters this year all across the nation may vote before Election Day.
Well, we should have, I mean, like, I'm a permanent absentee voter in L.A. County. I got notified of that after voting absentee over, like, a couple years. But even more, you know, involved than that, we ought to have a system where it's not based on a single day that goes back to farming times so that we can encourage more people to vote. And if we can send out Social Security checks through the mail, there's no reason that the overwhelming majority of people can't vote by mail or be registered to their driver's licenses. And then we can just have a small percentage of people who don't drive or who don't receive a regular mail to basically go in and register the regular way. But this is basically so antiquated that it basically deprives people in our whole society of one man, one vote.
At a certain level, yeah. And I live here in Oregon in a state where it's entirely voting by mail. There are no polling places in this state. And it works out quite well. So, you know, although I don't think any system is immune to the potential for fraud. Thanks a lot for the call, Harlan. Dominic in St. Louis. Hey, Dominic, you got a lot of people show up in your town for Barack Obama a couple days ago. Dominic? No, Dominic's not there. Steve in Miami. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? Great show. I'm a big fan.
Thank you.
Say, I was just listening to the reports from West Virginia about the irregularities in the polls, and I'm thinking, you know, it's early. Maybe we should be calling for UN monitoring of our elections here to keep an eye on things.
Yeah. I think we're about 8 years too late for that, Steve.
Really? I guess you are.
We're 8 years too late. We've had two major, you know, two presidential elections stolen, and in my opinion, clearly, seriously, and obviously stolen. The Supreme Court, we had three of those five justices voting basically to put George Bush into office, had members of their families working in the Bush campaign or were appointed by Bush's dad. I mean, you know, this is just so bizarre. Les in Texas, in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Les, we got about a half a minute here before we got to wrap up the hour. What's up?
Just making a quickie. There was an article in yesterday's Dallas Morning News from the Associated Press. And let me quote a couple of things here. It says, thousands of Texans who registered before October 6th deadline could find their names missing from the official voter list, officials said. They'll be allowed to cast ballots, but may have to fill out special forms at polling stations or wait a few days before voting. Skipping on, the Social Security Administration closed the computer program for the weekend.
Yeah, because, and this is, a lot of people are scratching their heads because the laws in many states are that they have to, now they've passed these laws saying you've got the new registrants, they have to check them against the Social Security system, and then the Social Security system says, oh, you know, for a week we're going to shut down our computers.
Right.
First time in 8 years, it's just a coincidence. Don't look behind that screen, you know, no droids in this car, whatever. Yeah, and so people are going to end up with placebo ballots. They're going to end up with provisional ballots, which probably won't be counted. You were absolutely right, Les, and there is a massive effort of election fraud going on in the United States by this administration and by Republicans all over the country, and finally one actually got busted and arrested. But you're not going to hear about that on Fox News. 57 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to our show. Tom Hartman here with you. Carrie Lucas on the line with us. She is the Vice President for Policy and Economics at the Independent Women's Forum, IWF.org, their website. Hey, Carrie.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
It's always great to have you with us, Carrie. Carrie, I want to encourage people to encourage entrepreneurs and business people to hire more people, and therefore I want to roll back the Reagan tax cut. Let's take our top marginal tax rate back up to 71%, where it was when Ronald Reagan came into office. I think that will cause a lot of jobs to be created, because instead of wealthy people and instead of entrepreneurs putting money in their own pocket, they'll say, why should I take that money as pay, you know, when I'm going to have to pay 70% over $3.2 million? Instead, I'll leave that in my business and I'll hire people with it.
But who's going to want to take the jobs when they when they're only going to be able to keep such a little amount of what they earn? So I think it's a double-edged sword. I think even Senator Obama has agreed that this idea of raising taxes in a time of economic turmoil could be problematic. So,
during Reagan, during the first year of Reagan's presidency, and during all of Nixon and Johnson and Kennedy's presidency, the top tax rate was 71. It was 91% before that under Republican Eisenhower, and it was fine with the Republican Congress, because it didn't kick in until you make $3.2 million in today's dollars, in inflation-adjusted dollars. And so if somebody's making under $3.2 million, they're not paying 71% income tax.
You know, it's really interesting, because I think this is this campaign has kind of taken so many twists and turns, but there really has been, ever since that whole Joe the Plumber incident and then the debate last week, there has been this kind of renewed focus on this basic concept of, do we as Americans believe in the concept of the redistribution of wealth, that the government should, as an end unto itself, take from the rich and give to the poor, play the role of Robin Hood. And it's interesting, because I think a lot of people out there are uncomfortable. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor. A lot of people don't like the idea of the government deciding how much money is too much, and deciding, instead of you being charitable with your own money and deciding how to redistribute it, deciding to do it on rich people's behalf. I think that that a lot of people just recoil from that, and I'm certainly among them.
Well, this is a concept that goes back to the founding of our country. You know, Thomas Jefferson wrote that an aggregation of great wealth is toxic to democracy. And a number of the founders were very, very concerned about this issue, that there's a certain point where wealth becomes actually destructive to a democratic society. I would submit to you that taxes for average working people, for people who spend 100% of what they earn, taxes don't matter at all. Taxes only matter for people who have so much left over after their lifestyle that they're saving or investing it. Those are the folks for whom taxes matter. Because if you're working, say you're working for $50,000 a year and you're paying $10,000 in taxes, you're actually earning $40,000 a year. If I'm your employer and I know that you'll work for $40,000 a year, if the taxes double and now, you know, you're only taking home $30,000, you're not going to be willing to work for that. I'm going to have to pay you more to make up for that. On the other hand, if taxes are cut in half and now you're making $45,000 after taxes a year, I know that you're willing to work for $40,000, so I'm going to cut your paycheck. And that's what we've seen. Ever since Reagan cut taxes on working people, the wages of working people have gone down because their employers know they're willing to work for less. And if you cut their taxes, they have more money, so we'll cut their wages. Whereas before Reagan cut taxes, wages were steadily going up all the way from 1930.
You know, it's always, I find it almost, it's hard to know where to begin, because I think that very few people remember the time of the 70s and the economy that we enjoyed before Ronald Reagan came into office. Very few people look on that back with nostalgia. There was double-digit inflation, double-digit unemployment. There were lots of problems, and I think that most people looking back now recognize that one of the things that was government had become a problem. Government had become too big and too intrusive in people's lives.
Well, it was the Vietnam War,
Carrie. Their money.
Carrie, that inflation and that unemployment was the consequence of our fighting and paying for the Vietnam War on credit. And the credit came due 10, 20 years later as credit, you know, when the government issues 10 and 20 year T-bills, it always does. And when the bill came due, bingo, we had inflation and essentially a severe stagflation recession, which we will have when the bill comes due for the Iraq War.
Well, you know, it
has nothing to do with tax policy.
There are certainly consequences. There are certainly consequences to running up incredible debts. You know, right now we have not only the debt that we owe, the actual debt that we all see on our balance sheet, but we also have the implicit liabilities of the Medicare and Social Security system. So we are going to have some real problems in paying for all that, and that's going to be painful in the coming decades. But I think that, you know, when you look at the idea of raising taxes, we all know that when your government doesn't always benefit, when we've seen for years there's been data on when taxes go up that revenues actually often go down because people stop doing the things that we're taxing.
Actually, not true, Carrie. I defy you. If you look at tax policies in more than one-year chunks, over the history of the United States. You know, I remember in 86, for example, they cut the tax on capital gains, and I remember it because I owned a business at the time, and I sold it that year because I would pay less taxes. So, yes, there was a boost, you know, and I paid capital gains in that year. So when they cut, when Reagan cut capital gains taxes, there was an increase in revenue from capital gains. But it was just for that year. The next year, I didn't sell another business. In fact, over time, I would argue it probably would have been healthier for the economy if I'd kept that business.
But certainly, I think that we
would have been healthier for me.
I think one of the problems with we all recognize that taxes, we levy taxes on things to discourage them. You levy taxes on cigarettes, and people put sin taxes on things like alcohol and these.
Sometimes,
you know, the Democrats want
but
to do
sometimes
it
we simply
taxes.
Levy taxes on things to pay for the things that relate to them. Our property taxes pay for our schools and our roads and our police and our fire departments because people who live in communities use those things. And so if you're going to live there, you're going to pay for them. What's wrong with that?
But certainly people understand that the basic idea that if you tax something, it's meant to discourage it. That's part of the logic behind something like the smoking, smoking taxes and things like that.
If you do confiscatory taxes, sure.
When you levy taxes on productive activity like savings, right now we have really punitive taxes on savings, which certainly must contribute to our low savings rate here in the United States.
It could be, and that's an area that I think is a legitimate debate that we really need to have in the United States. Why are we giving people tax breaks for owning homes and not giving them tax breaks for saving money? I mean, it's
absolutely, that's more something I wish that Republicans and Democrats have both been just terrible on some of the things that just skew economic decisions.
Well, the reason why is because the banking industry has lobbied on this, Kerry. This is why we have 401ks and IRAs and all that kind of thing. Why the government got into this business was because of lobbying from the banks and the brokerage houses who wanted to essentially lock up. Our ability prevent us from being able to easily move our money around and force us to put our money in situations where they actually they can skim a little piece off the top all the time.
Certainly. I'm all for it. I think that a lot of this the fact that we have these little tax accounts and you're allowed to save for one thing here, but you can't spend it on that.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. I think we can agree on that. But back to this idea of you're suggesting that, I or Barack Obama or anybody else, and I'm certainly not a surrogate for him. I don't think he's going anywhere near far enough, are just, in favor of redistributing wealth. What is wrong, first of all, with all of us getting together and saying we're going to collectively have the very cheapest, that is lowest overhead insurance policy against disasters in old age, disasters at birth, birth defects and serious problems like that, called Social Security? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with us collectively saying we're going to create our own health insurance company like every other industrialized country in the world does? We'll call it a single-payer health. We'll call it Medicare. What's wrong with that?
I think it's a basic idea of freedom and what the government was supposed to do and wasn't supposed to do. And you spoke in the beginning about Thomas Jefferson didn't like this idea of people being incredibly rich. Well, none of the founders also liked this idea of a federal government that is going to take care of you from cradle to grave.
Jefferson, as president, signed legislation that provided for the poor, that gave money for the poor, that gave them housing and food.
Well, they also, fine, there's going to be instances where they...
And so did John Adams, and so did George Washington.
They probably went in the direction of moving towards a welfare state. But we've got to remember there was a defined purpose for the federal government, and it wasn't to decide who gets what and set up the system which competes...
But Kerry, Jefferson started the University of Virginia as a free college. I mean, these guys were advocates of the government being involved in our lives in this way. Kerry, I'm sorry. The music is. I didn't mean to. I wasn't. I really wasn't trying to get in the last word there. Well, I guarantee you'll get the last word next time. But thanks for coming by. IWF.org, the International Women's Forum, the Independent Women's Forum. Kerry Lucas, the VP for Policy and Economics. Thanks, Kerry.
Thanks.
16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I got a pocket full of sunshine, and I got a love, and I know that it's all my love. Whoa.
9 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People, brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act. Go to teamster.org for more information. Just a quick heads up, it's the third hour of our program, an hour from now. Al Franken's going to drop by and say hi. It'll be nice to talk to Al again. Let's see here. Joe Republican, or Joe the Plumber, in this case. This is John Gray wrote this some years ago. You can find it all over the Internet. Just Google Joe Republican. But let's call it Joe the Plumber. Joe the Plumber gets up at 6 a.m. to prepare his morning coffee. He fills his pot full of good, clean drinking water because some liberal fought for minimum water quality standards. He takes his daily medication with his first swallow of coffee. His medications are safe to take because some liberal fought to ensure their safety and that they work as advertised. All but $10 of his medications are paid for by his employer's medical plan because some liberal union workers fought their employees for paid medical insurance. He prepares his morning breakfast, bacon and eggs this day. Joe's bacon is safe to eat because some liberal fought for laws to regulate the meatpacking industry. Joe the Plumber takes his morning shower, reaching for his shampoo. The bottle is properly labeled with every ingredient, the amount of its content, because some liberal fought for his right to know what he's putting on his body and how much it contained. Joe dresses, walks outside, and takes a deep breath. The air he breathes is clean because some tree-hugging liberal fought for laws to stop industries from polluting our air. He walks to the subway station for his government-subsidized ride to work. It saves him considerable money in parking and transportation fees. You see, some liberal fought for affordable public transportation, which gives everyone the opportunity to be a contributor. Joe the Plumber begins his work day. He's got a decent job, excellent pay, medical benefits, retirement, paid holidays and vacation. Because some liberal union member, this is if he was really a plumber, because some liberal union members fought and died for these working standards. His employer pays these standards. Well, it's noontime. Joe needs to make a bank deposit so he can pay some bills. His bank is federally deposited by the Federal Deposit Insurance, FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, because some liberal wanted to protect Joe's money from unscrupulous bankers who ruined the banking system during the last Republican Great Depression. Joe has to pay his Fannie Mae underwritten mortgage and his below-market federal student loan because some stupid liberal decided that Joe and the government would be better off if he was educated and earned more money over his lifetime. He's home from work. He plans to visit his father in his family's farm home in the country. Gets in his car for his drive to his dad's. His car is among the safest in the world because some liberal fought for car safety standards. Joe the Plumber arrives at his boyhood home. He was the third generation to live in a house financed by the Farmers Home Administration because bankers didn't want to make rural loans. The house didn't even have electricity until some big government liberal stuck his nose in where it didn't belong and demanded rural electrification. Those rural Republicans would still be sitting in the dark. He's happy to see his dad is now retired. His dad lives on Social Security and his union pension because some liberal made sure he could take care of himself so Joe wouldn't have to. After his visit with dad, he gets back in his car for the ride home. Turns on a radio talk show. The host keeps saying liberals are bad, conservatives are good. He doesn't tell Joe that his beloved Republicans have fought against every single protection and benefit that Joe enjoys throughout the day. Instead, Joe agrees with this guy. He says, we don't need those big government liberals ruining our lives. After all, I'm a self-made man who believes everyone should take care of themselves just like I have. And, you know, we should probably note also Joe the Plumber has the benefit of a free public education. And name one thing for me, please, that the Republican Party has done since Reconstruction. I mean, other than fighting the Civil War, please name, and yeah, I think you could argue that was good for America. I mean, it was a terrible, tragic thing. It's hard to summarize that in a soundbite. But basically, other than working to free the slaves for the first 20 years of its existence, from 1856 when the Republican Party was formed in Jackson, Michigan, until the late 1870s, early 1880s, when the Republican Party was taken over by the railroads. Other than that brief moment in time when it was the anti-slavery party, please name for me one thing that the Republican Party has done. It was Democrats who fought and won World Wars I and World War II. It was Democrats who fought for Social Security. It was Democrats who fought for unionization. Now, I'll give you, the Republican president, Abraham Lincoln, was in favor of unionization. In fact, he was the first president in the history of the United States to use the word strike in a public speech and to direct federal troops to stop it was in this case, it was in Chicago, to stop state and local police from breaking up a union strike. But that Republican Party only lasted 20 years, from 1856 to the 1870s. It's gone. Ever since then, it's been gone. So, literally every single benefit, from a 40-hour work week to knowing that your food is safe, to knowing that your drugs actually work the way that they're supposed to knowing that that your bank deposits aren't going to go into space, to right across the board, to knowing that your streets are paved and not filled with potholes, it's all been Democrats in every single case. The Democrats are the party who fight and win wars. The Republicans start, look at Iraq. This is a typical Republican disaster. Katrina, a typical Republican disaster. They're still trying to put together Galveston. They're still, nobody's talking about the hundreds of people who are still missing down, the dead bodies. They declared a no-fly zone so the news helicopters couldn't fly over the area. Why? Because the Republicans don't want us to see what happens when Republicans run the government. Pretty straightforward stuff. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Talk radio for the rest of us. Fair and slightly unbalanced. Yeah. 29-year-old resident of Swan Creek Township, Michigan, arrested. This is 90 miles northwest of Detroit. For receiving sexual favors from a vacuum at a car wash. I'm not making this up. Police Sergeant Gary Brindiger said a resident called to report suspicious activity at the car wash at about 6:45 in the morning. An officer approached on foot and caught the man in the act. The suspect, whose name wasn't immediately released, is being held in the Saginaw County Jail. Yes. And, of course, I don't know if you caught this on Saturday Night Live. Tina Fey, this is great.
At a rally in North Carolina this week, you said that you'd like to visit the, quote, pro-America parts of the country. Are there parts of the country that you consider un-American?
Oh, that was just my lame attempt at a joke. But, yes, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Delaware, California. Too, you have states like Ohio and Pennsylvania and Florida, which could be real, real anti-American or real, real pro-American. It's up to them. And now I'd like to entertain everybody with some fancy pageant walking.
That was great. And the other thing that was great over the weekend, Colin Powell talking about Barack Obama and how he is a transformational figure. Colin Powell's, here's his statement. I mean, this was...
Well, which is the president that we need now? Which is the individual that serves the needs of the nation for the next period of time? And I come to the conclusion that because of his ability to inspire, because of the inclusive nature of his campaign, because he is reaching out all across America, because of who he is and his rhetorical abilities, and we have to take that into account, as well as his substance. He has both style and substance. He has met the standard of being a successful president, being an exceptional president. I think he is a transformational figure. He is a new generation coming into the world, onto the world stage, onto the American stage. And for that reason, I'll be voting for Senator Barack Obama.
And then Colin Powell tells his story about this photo that he saw. And I saw the photo. You can see it. It's one of the top headlines over at democraticunderground.com. And last night I was stuck in the airport until the wee hours in Los Angeles, and my plane was late. And Louise and I were talking on the phone, and I just pulled the thing up, and I'm sitting in the red carpet club in the airport, you know, with literally a tear in my eye. I mean, just looking at this thing. I mean, it was just.
I feel strongly about this particular point because of a picture I saw in a magazine.
Now, the point that he's talking about, that he feels strongly about, is that Barack Obama has been criticized for being Muslim. Now, he's not Muslim. He's a Christian. He has been his entire life. But nonetheless, what's wrong with being Muslim? I mean, when did that become a slur? And why is the Republican Party, even in official pronouncements in some ways, and certainly in the under-the-radar stuff, why is the Republican Party saying that this is some terrible thing? And this is Colin Powell.
I feel strongly about this particular point because of a picture I saw in a magazine. It was a photo essay about troops who were serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. And one picture at the tail end of this photo essay was of a mother in Arlington Cemetery. And she had her head on the headstone of her son's grave. And as the picture focused in, you could see the writing on the headstone. And it gave his awards, Purple Heart, Bronze Star, showed that he died in Iraq, gave his date of birth, date of death. He was 20 years old. And then at the very top of the headstone, it didn't have a Christian cross. It didn't have a Star of David. It had a crescent and a star of the Islamic faith. And his name was Karim Rashad Sultan Khan, and he was an American. He was born in New Jersey. He was 14 years old at the time of 9/11, and he waited until he can go serve his country, and he gave his life. Now, we have got to stop polarizing ourselves in this way. And John McCain is as non-discriminatory as anyone I know, but I'm troubled about the fact that within the party, we have these kinds of expressions.
Amen. Amen. 866-303-2270, your telephone number. Mark in Thailand. Hey, Mark, listening online, I assume. I don't think we have an affiliate in Thailand.
Yes, I am, Tom. Yes, I am. And as I always listen to your show online from Thailand when I'm not in the United States, it's a pleasure to be on your show once again.
Thank you for calling.
You are one of the most adroit, intelligent, and, well, what can I say? One of the best.
Let's just get to what you're calling about, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Tom, you very frequently, and this goes to the heart of the Obama or the Acorn controversy and voter suppression, you very frequently play Paul Weyrich's audio.
Yes.
Regarding Google.
We don't want everybody to vote. In fact, our leverage goes up as the number
of
people.
I'm trying to get that very message, that very video out to the media pundits elsewhere, so because this really does cut clearly to the chase of the problem and the efforts that have been undertaken by the Republican Party for years. You have perhaps more power, I'm certain, than I do as an individual, and I hope you would try to push that up the chain to Keith Olbermann or Rachel or even Jack Cafferty or others within the media that might be able to expose this lie more clearly by showing this particular piece of video.
Yeah. Mark, let's hope. We're not a club where we sit around and plan, you know, how we're going to do the media. I keep on this theme, and I know some of those people listen to this program from time to time, and many of it, I mean, we all need to, but your point is well made. Mark, thank you very much for the call.
I would hope also that on election night, that when Barack Obama is declared President of the United States, that we might as a nation light every light and lamp, torch, sound every bell, horn, and klaxon, that we've seen the light, that we've send a clear and clarion signal to the rest of the world that our years of tyranny of the neocon Republican politics is over and over.
And on the other hand, if it's John McCain, I don't know if you saw the movie V for Vendetta, but November 5th is Guy Fawkes Day.
Yeah.
And I'll just leave it at that. Mark, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. Kathleen in Austin, Texas. Hey, Kathleen.
Hey, Tom. Great to be on there. Let me make a couple of points before you have to move on about voter suppression and election. One, I think there should be monitoring, because they're going to try to get away with it anything, and I think that there's two things that should be done. One, we should have a Democrat or even Republicans sitting there with a lockbox, and every provisional ballot goes into the lockbox with a tally of how many. That way, when, you know, 50,000 votes and 25,000 provisional ballots, then you've got a cause. And the other one is the Republicans can go in there with their list and they can challenge all these people. Well, at the other end of the table, we should have a Democrat in there taking, you know, if you have a problem, taking complaints, fill out a form, even, you know, sign your name to it.
There are a number of groups, Kathleen, that are doing that, and
are they allowed in the poll centers or you have to go or call or something like that?
It varies from state to state, and that's there's no single standard across the United States
I understand, but that's the point I'm saying. This has to be done on a state level, and if there are going to be problems for people that are showing up to do this, then those need to be pushed through the courts right away and saying, yes, these people have a right to be there and have a right to do this, that, or the other.
No, you're absolutely right, Kathleen.
Especially the provisional ballots. I think that's very important.
Well, yes and no. What we need to do is we need to reduce the number of provisional ballots, because provisional ballots are the consequence of your vote being challenged. And so the more provisional ballots and provisional ballots, Greg Palast refers to them as placebo ballots because they're very rarely counted. There's still over 100,000 provisional ballots in Ohio from the 2004 election that have not yet been opened because they were challenged. And there's going to be, the number, the website is 866-OurVote.org. 866-OurVote.org. And of course and of course the phone number is 866-OurVote, Our Vote. And it's the nation's largest nonpartisan voters, you know, representation group, as it were, and something that you need to know about. Steve in Atlanta. Hey, Steve. Quick one.
Hey, Tom. I'm a liberal down here in middle of Georgia and talking to Joe Republican all the time.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I can usually get through with Joe Republican is something I wish you had mentioned when you were talking to that last lady conservative you were talking to.
Mm-hmm.
I hate, you know, I'm not trying to criticize because Lord knows you do a great job.
No, I do.
But the point is, when she starts mentioning this wealth redistribution,
mm-hmm.
and McCain's starting to redistribute it, or is starting to mention it too, is point out that wealth is already being redistributed from us up to them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good point, Stephen. And in fact, here's this story if I can get my computer to run here, it's brutally slow. From The Guardian. It takes the UK papers, right? The headlines, Wall Street banks in... Now, keep in mind, that Wall Street banks were giving $700 billion to. Wall Street banks in $70 billion staff payout. Pay and bonus deals equivalent to 10% of U.S. government bailout package. $70 billion.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Minutes before the hour. The Tom Hartman Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say no. A passenger jet, this from The Sun, UK newspaper, a passenger jet coming in to land at Heathrow had a near miss with a UFO. The Alitalia flight captain Achille Zaghetti was at 22,000 feet when he saw a brown 10-foot-long missile-shaped object 1,000 feet above him. He said, "At once I said, 'Look out!' to my co-pilot, who looked and saw what I'd seen." Air traffic controllers also reported an unidentified object on their screens. No, it was not a missile. The nobody knows what it was. Speaking of weird stories, this from Mark Crispin Miller shared this with me. It's from a voter in Nashville, Tennessee. And the fellow who's writing it, David, he's actually David Earnhardt. Oddly, coincidentally, weirdly enough, he is the, I mean, this is a real Twilight Zone. He's the producer, director, and writer of the movie Uncounted. Uncountedthemovie.com is the website. So anyhow, his wife went in to vote. Here's her story, and this is quoting his wife, Patricia Earnhardt. A poll worker directed me to a touchscreen voting machine and instructed me in how to use it. I touched Obama for president, and nothing lit up. I touched two or three times more, and still nothing lit up. I called the poll worker back over to tell him I was having a problem. He said I just needed to touch it more lightly. I tried two or three times more lightly with the poll worker watching, and still nothing lit up. The poll worker then touched it for me twice. Nothing lit up. The third time he touched the Obama button, the Cynthia McKinney space lit up. The McKinney button was located five rows below the Obama button. The poll worker just kind of laughed and canceled the vote. He hit the Obama again, button again, and it finally lit up. I continued on to cast the rest of my votes. After completing the process and reviewing my votes, I went to the vote page and hit the vote button, and nothing happened. Again, after several tries, I called the poll worker over, and he finally got the machine to register my vote. Hooray! I voted. Or did I? I left the polling place feeling uncertain. And then David says, I had similar problems with the machine I was voting on the same day, although no vote flipping. I would touch the screen numerous times before I could get my candidate choices to light up. Very strange, very frustrating. Why have we privatized our election system? Makes no sense to me at all. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, on the line with us. Hey, Ellen, what's going on in Washington, D.C. and around the world today?
The president today is actually having a roundtable summit in Louisiana, depending on how you pronounce the state. He's going to be in Alexandria. And actually, tomorrow he's doing something kind of interesting. As I always like to say, a stopped clock is right twice a day. And he's doing a White House summit on international development. And he actually has some people who are pretty bipartisan. I mean, he's got the right-wingers like Michael Gerson there, but he also has Congressman Donald Payne, and he's got Ken Hackett from Catholic Relief, and he's got some sort of Millennial Challenge people. So it's a really interesting group of people that he's doing on trying to develop more international development, which I actually think is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the New York
Times. That's happening.
Yeah, okay.
The other thing that, of course, is happening is that today Federal Reserve Chairman Bernanke said that he would like a new round of government stimulus. When asked about it later on the morning gaggle, Dana Perino kind of sidestepped it because it's not in direct support of the Bush administration's point of view, to say the least. He said if the Congress proceeds with a fiscal package, it should consider measures to help improve access to credit by consumers, home buyers, businesses, and other borrowers. And he believes that that will be helpful in terms of job creation. He said a whole lot else today, but he said that uncertainty currently surrounding the economic outlook. And he said that he thinks that there has to be some trade-offs in a new fiscal package. But, of course, the White House is not committed to a second fiscal stimulus package in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, which, you know, given the fact that we're going to have, for all practical purposes, a new president in the next 3 weeks, maybe it's a good thing that the White House just kind of backs off for a while. There, you know, every time George Bush comes out and says anything, the market tanks. He should just, you know, back off and back away, and you know, we'll see where it goes.
Well, speaking of that, the United Nations today, their head of the International Labor Organization, says that unemployment is going to rise by 210 million by the end of 2009, the highest level since they have ever tracked that, and that, of course, is world unemployment.
Yeah.
Additional unemployment. 210 million additional people out of work in the world is not a good situation.
No, and that's in the developed and industrialized world. On top of that, you have another 3 or 4 billion people who are currently out of work. You know,
right.
Who are living on less than $5 a day.
No, right. They're talking about people who actually have had jobs recently.
Right. Yeah.
So it's not a pretty situation. And of course, a lot of people are wondering about the Powell effect. I've been checking a lot of the Suffolk University poll has Obama up in Ohio by like 7 points. And then yet there's another poll, that has, Obama, that has McCain up, by one. It's an NBC Mason-Dixon poll in Ohio. So I think Ohio is a very fluid situation and maybe like six blind men and the elephant where everybody has a different slice of it.
Yeah, and, you know, it was interesting, Joe, you know, Morning Joe, what's his name, was on TV yesterday. I saw it in the, I'm sorry.
Scarborough.
Yeah, Joe Scarborough. I'm running on 3 hours sleep here. Joe Scarborough was on one of the shows yesterday, and he said, you know, Barack Obama should be spending all his time in Ohio and Florida. And I have a feeling he's right. These states are going to really decide this.
Well, the Florida situation on one of the most recent polls has McCain up two in Florida.
Yeah, ouch. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thanks, Ellen.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. Coming up next, we'll continue with the news of the day with your calls at 866-303-2270. And toward the end of the next hour, Al Franken's going to drop by and say hi. So stick around with us right here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, Viagra for your brain. And it does not lead to stiff thinking.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, sometimes you look at these things and you just go, what? Here, I'm looking at OregonLive.com, which is our local paper, the Oregonian. It's this, pretty much a statewide paper. And this, Oregon voters, get your pens ready. Election officials begin mailing ballots today to the state's 2 million registered voters who have until November 6th to turn them in. What? Yeah. I'm baffled. I don't get it. Something strange going on. Well, the Dow's up 199 points. The thing that Americans have forgotten, and this was, I mean, everybody understood this 30, 40, 50 years ago, and we've had this collective amnesia in part because of Reaganomics. I mean, Ronald Reagan came along with this insane idea that if we borrow trillions and trillions of dollars and charge it to our children and spend that money to make the economy look good, that it'll mean the economy is good. Reaganomics is identical to somebody saying, well, I'm going to have a really good lifestyle. I've got 12 credit cards, and I'm going to run every single one of them up to the max over the next 5 years, and the next 5 years are going to be just great. And for 5 years, all the neighbors are going to go, wow, look at that. Just got a new car. They got a new house. They got new furniture. They got, wow, look at that. But the bill comes due. And we're seeing the Dow. I mean, you know, the Dow is a little over 9,000 right now. The Dow is not what drives the economy. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is not, or the stock market in general, is a reflection of the health of businesses. It's not a reflection in any way of the health of the average worker in the United States. There is no index right now that is widely reported, that's widely used to measure that. We used to keep track of this stuff. There used to be labor sections in the newspapers. There used to be labor pages in newspapers in the United States. We no longer have those. I remember growing up in Michigan, and we had the Detroit News and the Detroit Free Press. One paper had a business section. The other paper had a labor section. One paper was Republican. The other was Democratic. Everybody got it. Everybody understood. The fundamentals of an economy are the wage earners. All demand is driven from the bottom up. All demand. The only thing that allows companies to be successful is if people are buying things. We have a consumer-driven economy, and people can buy things with money that they get from one of two sources. And traditionally in America, for the entire history of this country, until 30 years ago, the vast majority of purchases were made by the vast majority of the middle and working class of America with wages, with money they got from their paycheck, with money they got for doing the work that they do. And then starting 30 years ago, when Reagan declared war on working people in America and busted the PATCO as the firing shot out of the gate, the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Organization, then brought down that union and just basically declared war on unions, on unionized workers. At that time, we had 25% of the American private workforce was unionized. Now it's about 8, 9%, 7%, depending on whose numbers you're using, whether or not you, if you include government workers, it goes up to over a little over 11%. It's still a fraction of that. Reagan declared war on working people, and the consequence of that was that wages started going down. Wages have been going down steadily since Reagan became president. Real wages adjusted for inflation. So how have people continued to buy? Well, I can tell you, 30 years ago, people owned a good chunk of their homes. When my dad died, he fully owned his home. And that was the norm 30 years ago. People actually had a lot of equity in their houses. People bought cars. They didn't lease them. They didn't essentially rent them. They bought them. And it was an asset. People had some wealth in America. People were buying things with their paychecks. But starting and throughout the history of America, demand was driven by wages. Well, when wages started flattening in the 1980s, and they've been flat for 30 years now, 26 years, 28 years, we've had flat wages. But demand has continued to increase. Why? Because people have access to cheap credit. This was Alan Greenspan's gift to America. We'll cut their wages down, as he said in the Wall Street Journal. He saw his job as the Fed chairman to raise interest rates when the economy got too hot, when there was too much demand for labor, because that would produce what Greenspan referred to as wage inflation. Don't want to have that. Now, we can give, $70 billion to the Wall Street bankers who are getting $700 billion, literally a $70 billion bonuses and wages to these guys out of the $700 billion that we just appropriated. We can do that. That's not wage inflation. But here's the bottom line. Without wages driving demand, we have been driving demand with credit. People have been using credit to buy things. Well, that five-year period is up that I used from the previous example. The $10 trillion that Reaganomics has put on our national credit card, it's coming due. And what's that going to do? It's going to produce a cut in demand. Because if you don't have wages driving demand, you have to use credit. And we've been using credit for 26 years, and we're coming to the limits of credit. We're coming to the end. Excuse me, sneezed. We're coming to the end of cheap credit and easy and freely available credit. And as we do, people are going to have to stop buying things. Or they're going to reinflate the bubble and make a little more credit available to us and turn us into a nation, not just of paupers, but massive debtors. And the only solution to this, and it's a very straightforward one, and it's one that John Maynard Keynes laid out, and it's one that Franklin Roosevelt got. The only solution to this, it's not a tax cut. It's a wage increase. We need to increase the minimum wage. We need to increase wages right across the board. I was astounded the other day when John McCain made the point. This is the point that I made on Fox News over the weekend. John McCain comes out and he says, "Oh, Barack Obama wants to cut. He says he's going to cut the taxes on the American working people, but 40% of working people don't even pay taxes." Well, they do pay taxes, John. They pay FICA. They pay the payroll tax that John McCain, making over $100,000 a year, doesn't have to pay on all of his income over the first $100,000. They do pay taxes, but they may not pay the income tax. Why? Because they live below the functional poverty level. I was waiting for the explosion to come. John McCain comes out and he says, 40% of American workers don't pay taxes. Somebody should be saying, what? You mean 40% of American workers make so little money? They're living in such terrible conditions. They don't even pay taxes. They're functionally below the poverty level. What kind of country is this? What kind of an America is this where we can have a presidential nominee? You can have John McCain, the Republican Party's nominee for president, proudly point out that 40% of working Americans make so little money that they don't pay income taxes. This is not something to be proud of. This is a national embarrassment. This is a tragedy. We really need, in the United States, we really need to start looking at this whole issue of wages versus credit, of where demand is coming from. Where is the money coming from to buy things? Because if we don't start increasing wages significantly in the United States, and by the way, where are you going to get the money to increase wages of working people? You're going to have to start cutting some of these $70 billion payouts to the senior executives. Because at a certain level, it is a zero-sum game. There is a, but if we don't start paying working people more in this country, we are going to see a depression. And that's the challenge that Barack Obama is facing. And that's why I say over and over and over again, assuming that Obama gets elected, which is not a safe assumption at this point. I mean, if you know that you're going to vote, you need to get five other people to vote. You know, show up, volunteer, take the day off on election day and volunteer to drive people to the polls who can't get to the polls otherwise. Or volunteer to go watch the polls and make sure that people who vote actually get their vote counted. Participate. But in any case, if Barack Obama is elected, our work begins on Guy Fawkes Day on November 5th. That's when our work begins, because we then start to have to start pushing him to listen to the Keynesians around him, the people who understand how an economy works, rather than Robert Rubin and Lawrence Summers, who brought us much of this disaster, who are surrounding him. And the fact of the matter is, I'm very optimistic about that, because Barack Obama has demonstrated his willingness to listen to a variety of points of view and then make a decision about what he thinks is best. I don't always agree with him, but he is at least listening. It's something George W. Bush doesn't do. It's something John McCain doesn't do. It's something Sarah Palin clearly doesn't do. I mean, I guess listening requires it even understanding the issues to begin with. It's just, isn't that mind-boggling that Sarah Palin is even on the table? There's a serious race here? In any case, wages. Keep your eye on wages. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Time now for our tragic Limbaugh alert for the day.
Condescending clients making money selling lies.
You might say, everybody hates my guts.
Hates his guts.
I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm a sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic guts.
And now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this, they always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s.
I'm a Nazi. He's a Nazi.
That's right.
I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class, because I'm a fat conservative butthead with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative butthead.
Hey,
the face of a horse's ass.
Yeah, so our Limbaugh alert for the day, here he is speaking about Mr. Powell.
Now back to General Powell. I just want to button this up because the drive-by has had a tizzy over my allegation that his nomination was about race. Well, let me say it louder, and let me say it even more plainly. It was totally about race. The Powell nomination or endorsement, totally about race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In closing, let me say that each and every day, I'm an evil, rotten, egotistical snob.
Evil, rotten.
I'm the cop of Joe McCarthy-like Gestapo, the right-wing, foam-of-the-mouth, jack-booted slob, the Democratic
So our Limbaugh alert for the day. Yeah, enough of that. 866-303-2270 is our telephone number. And Julio in Phoenix. Hey, Julio, what's up?
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. Hello, I have a question.
But not on a speakerphone. Please pick up the phone.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, sir.
Well, I was thinking about the new government that probably we're going to get. And nobody talks about the changes that they can do, like all those unconstitutional laws that were passed in the government of Bush.
Yeah. Not to mention 700 signing statements. No, Julio, you're absolutely right. And there are a whole variety of these things, from the changes in the FISA Act. Frankly, there's things that I'd like to see, like the bankruptcy bill repealed, the so-called reforms. I mean, but in particular, let's bring back Posse Comitatus. I mean, we brought it back legislatively. Bush added a signing statement to it saying, no, it's not. Let's bring back habeas corpus. This is written into the Constitution in two different places. This was at the core of the founding of this country. Bush got rid of it. Let's shut down Guantanamo. Let's put some of these people on trial for war crimes. Absolutely right. And I think that what's the reason that there hasn't been much discussion about it is because the Obama campaign has wanted to run a positive, forward-looking, high-minded, idealistic campaign. And many of us, myself included, early on thought that that was a sure loser. And in fact, it has captured the imagination and the enthusiasm of the American people. Thank God that he was right and I was wrong. That a campaign can actually work. Well, we'll find out on November 4th. But that a campaign can actually work that is talking about the issues. What a great thing. Kim in Seattle. Hey, Kim.
Hi. I just wanted to make two points. In presidential debates, the candidates confuse the uneducated in the Constitution by referring to their tax policy or their economic policies when technically they only have such policies to the extent Congress will implement whatever policy the future president has.
Right.
And then the second thing is that it annoys me knowing that so many representatives and senators are not present for voting on bills that come before them. And there's no reason that our representatives shouldn't stand up and be counted on the issues before them. That's what we pay them to do.
Yeah, although there are times when you've got, an entire day in Congress where it's, let's declare today National Button Collecting Day. I mean, it's just there's a lot of stuff. There are a lot of votes that are perfunctory. But Kim, yeah, if you watch enough C-SPAN, you get it how very often there's really very, very little paying of attention going on. And we really need more. So good point. Let's see here. Pontiac, Michigan. Dan. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Hi, Dan. Tom, I should say. I talked to you before about Barack Obama's position on the Iraq War, and, I didn't get a chance to respond to you, but there was a journalist who actually, pinned the campaign spokesman down and did an official interview to see what Barack's going to do with Iraq after he gets elected. Mm-hmm. And, what I had told you before about them wanting, Barack's going to continue to protect five key areas of Iraq after he's elected, and that's not going to get us out of Iraq. Our troops are going to still be targets, and we're still going to be seen as buyers there.
It may be, Dan, and if it is, it'll be a great tragedy. I just don't think that Barack Obama's that stupid, frankly. I mean, what is said right now leading up to the campaign sometimes is what has to be said. But he's pretty clear that we need to be getting out of Iraq, and I think we all are. 27 minutes past.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
How does it feel?
defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman with you. 91 days, 9 hours, 55 minutes, 6 seconds, until George W. Bush leaves office. Well, there's a new emoticon in our chat room of one person spanking another. And our chat members are having great fun. So maybe you don't want to go over there right now if you don't want to get spanked. But I don't know. Anyhow, TomHartman.com. You can drop into our chat room. Barack Obama today in Fayetteville, North Carolina, responding to John McCain charging that he wants to redistribute the wealth and it's socialism. He says, it's kind of hard to figure out how Warren Buffett endorsed me. Colin Powell embraces me and John McCain thinks I'm embracing socialism, Obama said. This is his argument, because I want to give a tax cut to the middle class. I want to give a tax cut to 95% of American workers. Here's the truth, North Carolina, said Barack Obama. This debate and this election comes down to what we value. In the America I know, we don't just value wealth. We value the work and workers who create it. He can call me any name he wants, but what he's talking about is not change. It's not change. That's why we're going to beat him in this election on November 4th, Barack Obama. When was the last time you heard a politician or anybody, particularly a pundit, talk about workers creating wealth? I mean, this was Abraham Lincoln's big thing. He said labor is superior to capital because it precedes it. In other words, you don't have money until somebody makes something, until somebody does something. Labor is what creates wealth. The labor theory of value, David Ricardo, 1816. I mean, Adam Smith acknowledged it in Wealth of Nations. It was common knowledge in America. Now we think wealth is created by what? Winning the lottery? By gambling in the stock market? That's not creating wealth. That's moving wealth around. Creating wealth is labor. And, you know, we need to acknowledge that. We need to just put it right out there. Monica in Graham, Washington. Hey, Monica, what's up?
Oh, hi. Yeah, I'm 67 years old, and I remember the days when my mother worked hard as a nurse and wasn't able to buy a house because a woman had to have 50% down. You might not know that because you're a lot younger than me. So she was not able to buy a home, which in essence would have given her, you know, more freedom, and she had to rent all her life. And many, many people are in that situation, including myself, as I grew up in the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. And the government came in because people voted it in that would have to stop, that they would pay us equal wages, and that the banks would have to fund us and let us finance homes. But you know what? You can never make it up. The fact that all those women that were and minorities that were denied homes in those days can never go back and make that up. And
right.
That's why we're so far behind today. So the redistribution thing is simply, like you said, giving back what many people had taken away so many years ago. And it goes back pretty far, even with today.
This is the biggest challenge that African Americans face, is that even if they're getting the same income, there's a lack of family wealth. And I'm not talking great wealth. I'm just talking about a lack of the basis of multi-generational wealth that whites in this country by and large have. And you're right, Monica, the same is true for women.
And then also because these people come and say, well, they had these bad loans, because banks were willing to give these people loans that they didn't do before. And they're not bad. They just wanted a home. They wanted the American dream,
just like my mother did,
but she couldn't.
Right. Yeah.
And
well said. Well said, Monica. Thank you very much.
And
in fact, there is an absolute viral video going around. Every Republican on the planet has gotten 15 spam emails to see the thing. And, they all sent them to me. And it basically alleges that because Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton were talking about let's help more people have an affordable home, that they were talking about changing credit standards. And what they were talking about, by and large, was eliminating the laws that Monica's talking about, eliminating, or the policies rather, and making it harder for banks to redline, to say, you know, people can't buy a home in a particular area and all those kind of things. And when Bush came in, he was using that exact same rhetoric. He was using the same language. In fact, he was bragging about it. But he was using it to change regulations. And, you know, it's a night and day difference. I mean, it's a really substantial difference, and one that we need to point out, I think, over and over and over again. Let's see here. George in Montrose, Colorado. Hey, George, what's up?
Hi. Thank you, Tom, for taking my call. And thank you for your rational voice of reality and facts. I wanted to talk about this Michelle Bachmann, her McCarthy-like appearance on Hardball.
Yeah, that was scary.
Yeah. You know. Well, such a great thing happened because of it. You probably noticed that her Democratic opponent, Ed Tinklenberg, I believe mm-hmm. it is, raised like $650,000 within a few days of that appearance.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of how important the down-ticket races are, not just where you live, but those places where it can make a difference. Like, I gave to the opponent of Allen, you know, mm-hmm. 2 years ago.
Yeah, Tinklenberg is going to be on our show later this week. But,
oh, excellent. And people should pick two or three states.
Yep.
And give money where they don't live, because the numbers in the House and the Senate are so important, not just for Barack Obama.
Yeah, absolutely right and well said. Thank you very much, George. I totally agree with you. And probably one of the very best websites for this is the Daily Kos. The Daily Kos they've got this whole campaign of flipping red states blue, and they're strategically identifying races that are worth supporting. And so there's some great stuff there. Wayne in Jonesboro, Arkansas. Hey, Wayne, what's up?
I was curious as to what you thought about the reason why the Obama campaign is not mentioning the Alaska independence movement of Sarah Palin whenever Bill Ayers is mentioned.
Because they're not doing tit for tat. They're not taking the low road. I agree with you that the Alaska Independence Party is one that we probably should be paying more attention to. I mean, you talk about your basic people who don't love America.
Mm-hmm. But wouldn't this be the sort of thing that you might find from the campaign that was not said by Barack Obama, but perhaps by someone else as a spokesman who might mention it, just get the word out there, or just give reference to it.
It would be a good idea, and I think it needs to be mentioned more, and perhaps now is the time to mention it. And Wayne, thanks for bringing it up and giving me an excuse to play this cut. This is Joe Vogler, the founder of the Alaska Independence Party. This is the group that Sarah Palin says, keep up the great work. This is the group that Sarah Palin recorded in 2008, a welcome, you know, congratulations on your annual meeting here in Alaska. This is the group that Sarah Palin's husband was a member of right up until 2002. This is the founder of the Alaska Independence Party.
The fires they hail are frozen glaciers compared to my hatred for the American government, and I won't be buried under their damn flag. I'll be buried in Dawson. And when Alaska is an independent nation, they can bring my bones home back to my country.
And in fact, when he died, he was buried in Dawson. He was buried in the Yukon Territories in Canada rather than the United States. That's how much this guy hated the United States. And that's the party. That's Todd Palin's party. And, yeah, I think people should be talking about it, frankly. Lynn in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Lynn, what's on your mind today?
Well, hi, Tom. It's Lynn Landis.
Lynn Landis.
Yes. Well, we started a new group called CountTheBallots.org, and it's a twofold. It has a twofold purpose. One is to really get people to audit the polls on election day.
So how do we do that, Lynn?
Well, I've got a toolkit. People can go to the website, countTheBallots.org, and just download everything you need to audit the count. Because if these candidates for office and if the voters don't get involved in Election Day auditing, they're just sitting ducks for another rigged election. So this is something that
the website again is what?
CountTheBallots.org.
I just went there and I got a service unavailable.
Do it again. For whatever reason, our service provider is having some difficulty, but keep trying. It will come back up.
Okay. Counttheballotsplural.org.
.org. Right. Okay. It will come back up. We're struggling with that, unfortunately. And we just sent out a press release about this organization. The purpose of the citizen audit is threefold. One is to verify election results as well as possible. Two is to document complaints. And three is to demonstrate, you know, what a real election should look like. And, you know, this is not a new idea. We have groups out there that have been doing types of citizen audits previously. One is Judy Alter from California. So I really encourage people to get involved and don't let this election go by without somebody looking at these votes.
Amen. Lynn, you're one of the great people out there doing that work. And the website, counttheballots.org, and it's down right now, but write it down and check it out a little later on. Sometimes sites just get slammed when they get mentioned on our show. We have so many people who check them out. Lynn, thank you very much. 45 minutes past the hour.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
And I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you and I don't like how you've been treating my stars and stripes. You took our jobs and sent them overseas. Now we owe billions to the red Chinese. You blew the budget and you bossed Iraq. So I'm taking my
yes, my friends, we are taking our country back one congressional district at a time, one dog catcher at a time, one U.S. senator at a time. Al Franken on the line with us, running for the United States Senate from Minnesota. Hey, Al.
Hey, Tom.
Great to have you with us. Michelle Bachmann in your state, she must be the gift that keeps on giving. I understand even your opponent, Norm Coleman, is running away from her.
He can't embrace the top of the ticket, and he can't embrace anyone below him on the ticket. I mean, he's got a tough state, you know, to run in right now.
Yeah, and from what I'm hearing from my listeners, a lot of people in Minnesota can't embrace him. I mean, they're just so tired of having senators who vote with George Bush the majority of the time, and then try to pretend that they're populist. It's just incredible. I see that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has dumped $1.44 million into your race or into Minnesota.
Right.
And they're going after you around the Employee Free Choice Act.
Right.
My take on this has always been, when I register to vote, I do so publicly. My voter registration is a matter of public record, and whether I've declared myself to be a Democrat or Republican is a matter of public record. Why is it that registering to have a union is any different? The card check is simply registering to vote. Once that card has been signed and the union has been brought in, then there are secret ballots to determine who's going to run the union, how it's going to be run, what the rules are going to be, all those kind of things. This is just voter registration.
Well, I mean, it is voting for a union, but here's the thing. There's two ways to form a union, and they are, it's majority sign-up, which is the card check, which is what you're talking about, and then there's the secret ballot under the National Labor Relations Board. And throughout, you know, history, the history of this, the employer, the management has been the one to choose the method by which they do this. And employers often pick the card check because they want to know who's doing what. And the Employee Free Choice Act simply gives it the choice to the employees. And remember, this isn't a union yet. This is just to form a union. And the employees can do a majority sign-up, can do a card check, or they can, if 30% of them choose to do a secret ballot, they can do a secret ballot. The reason for this, the Employee Free Choice Act, is that the management has been intimidating folks.
Mm-hmm. It's a billion-dollar industry.
After management chooses a secret ballot, there's a period of time between when that is chosen and when the election is. And they bring people in to require people to come to meetings and tell them things like, you're all going to be fired if there's a union. And they do fire people who are known organizers or known to be sympathetic to the union. And there's just a history of this.
Yeah.
So that's the purpose of this. Now, the Chamber of Commerce has been running ads that have just been deemed false by objective journalists. There's a, in Minnesota, there's a guy named Pat Kessler who does this thing on CCO TV, which is, it's called Reality Check, and he just said these ads have been false. And they have been. And yet they run them, and they run them, and they're running them on the radio, and they're running them on TV. And yeah, I've been, you know, the target, you know, this
they're
is
doing the same
a very
thing.
Vicious campaign.
Yeah, here in Oregon, they're doing the same thing against Jeff Merkley. Gordon Smith,
sure.
You know, is the Republican senator who's running for re-election, and he's voted.
Well,
just,
they've done this in New
like
Hampshire.
Coleman.
They've done it in Colorado. They're doing it all over the place, and they simply don't want, you know. And the most pernicious part of this is they're making it sound like I'm anti-union. You know,
right.
So they don't, you know, Al Franken, you know, after being endorsed by unions, turned his back on them and is denying you the free, you know. So it's
so
very
frustrating.
They're trying
to crush unions. They're pretending that they're the friends of unions. And as you're promoting unions and trying to provide people who want to be in a union with more options about how to get into a union, they're condemning you for. See, this is the whole Republican, you know, the world is flat, the sky is, you know, up is down, left is right, you know, black is white. I mean, it is just bizarre the way these guys spin this stuff. It's
well, you know, I mean, I obviously wrote about this and talked about this before. And by the way, I want to say how proud I am that you came in for me.
Oh,
and what
you.
A great job you're doing, and what a great job I hear you're doing from everybody that I talk to.
Thank
so.
You, Al. They were big shoes to fill, and I'm pleased to be filling them.
Well, you haven't totally filled them, Tom.
No, I'm not running for the Senate.
But now I'm running for the Senate, and things are looking very good. And people can go on alfranken.com if they want to see what the race is about and if they want to help us.
Yeah, and alfranken.com is the place to go to check it out, to get with this race. We need to be helping out. We need to be participating with candidates who, as like Al, in particular Al, is running for the Senate. This is going to be a close race.
Right now it's pretty close. I think I have a small lead, and I think I've moved ahead of him, and the excitement is unbelievable.
Yeah.
We were just down in the first district in southern Minnesota, town after town, huge crowds, and it's very, very exciting, and the momentum is with us, and as long as we have the resources to keep going, we're gonna win this one.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely marvelous. And in addition to the union issue, I mean, you know, we need to raise wages in this country if we're going to save ourselves financially. There are so many other things that are so important. You can check it all out at alfranken.com. Al, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, well, thank you, Tom. Keep going, man.
Yeah, I will, and you too. And thanks for running for the United States Senate. You got a lot of courage to do that, more than I do.
It's nothing.
Al Franken, alfranken.com. Coming up tomorrow on the show, we will be we'll be talking with Tara Ross about the Electoral College. Should we have an Electoral College? Should we be voting directly for the president? Plus, the postman is going to drop by and tell us why it might be a good idea to just walk away from that bad mortgage. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.